Welcome to Recurring Nightmares, Episode 1, The Wicker Man 1973 versus The Wicker Man 2006. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And before we get started with anything here, this is a brand new show, so I feel like we should spend a minute at least explaining what we intend to do with this project. The general idea here, and this has evolved a little bit, originally it was we'll review two horror movies a month, and one of them will be new and one of them will be old. That's still kind of the idea, but it's a little, I felt that it was a little too restrictive, and so it's kind of, what we're going to do is each month we're going to have a new episode reviewing two horror movies from different eras. So it could be a movie from the 80s and then a movie from the 90s or whatever. It doesn't, you know, one of them doesn't have to be quote unquote new.
Right.
But we're, you know, the idea is we're putting together kind of a double feature for you and kind of tied around a singular theme. So this month, that theme would be, you know, fear of religion or more specifically like religious cults. And the two films I chose were it was an original film and then a remake, which came out much later. But it won't always be, you know, an original film and a remake. I have stuff planned throughout the year that mostly isn't that. But we're starting out with that original and a remake. And I'll explain why I chose those movies, since I chose for this first episode, when we get into it. But yeah, then the other thing of it is, you know, we're going to take turns hosting each month, and the host of that month will get to pick the movies. So at the end of tonight's episode, Chris, you get to tell us what we're going to be watching for June.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're going to go do it. But before any of that, you know, we used to do a regular movie review show together called Movie Dudes that we did for the better part of the last decade. We finally ended it this January. In a way, it was kind of prescient to stop doing a current movie review show because the world ended and now there's not a lot of new movies coming out.
Movies do not exist anymore. It is all just old. So,
but I mean, all that said, you know, I want to take some time at the beginning of each episode of Recurring Nightmares for you and I to talk about what we've been watching, what we've seen, and that will be our way of kind of keeping up with current stuff, and you know, maybe not even necessarily horror, just talking about movies. You know, not doing full reviews, but just, you know, saying a word or two about them and talking about them for a minute and moving on before we get into our feature reviews. So here we are. It's been, we have not recorded a movie review podcast since January. So I feel like there's been maybe some stuff, hopefully. Chris, what have you been watching lately?
Lately, I mean, this since we ended our movie show in January, I have not watched much. I'm only at 17 movies for the entire year at this point, which is extremely low.
Does that include like rewatches and old stuff?
That's everything.
Like, whoa,
it's a low number. I've been doing other things, but. I did see a few new movies, maybe some that you saw as well. I guess kick off with Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. That movie's fine.
Yeah, I saw that too. I thought it was okay. It was,
yeah.
I'm not huge into the comic book movies. At least was kind of like trying to be fun and a little different. And
it has this fun kind of upbeat vibe to it, but honestly, I don't remember a whole ton about it. So that's something.
I do remember one thing was like Ewan McGregor was just like chewing scenery as the villain. He was fun.
Yeah. Like, I mean, everybody seems to be having a good time in it. as somebody who likes, you know, comic books and specifically from the Batman realm, I'm not necessarily a fan of some of the changes they made to particular characters here, but you know, Cassie Kane is, well, she's like this really young girl in this film here, and she's been young since she was introduced, but when she was originally introduced in the comics, she's like this ultimate badass that becomes Batgirl at one point. I do not see that from the Cassie Kane they put on screen.
It's just like a little girl that like has a pickpocket, right? Like,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, everybody else seemed to be having a blast in it. So
I do wish I did like the other characters besides Harley. Like
yeah, Huntress was good.
And Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
She Huntress? Yeah. Yep. She's Huntress.
And it felt like they didn't really get together till like the end. And then it was just like, yeah, we'll be back for the sequel or whatever. And I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but
yeah. It did not do as well as I guess they were hoping. And it did come out, you know, before the world ended. So, some films that came out like right as this was all starting, you could see where maybe a studio might take another chance on it, but I don't know if Warner does with this one. It
did have a chance.
Yeah, it had its chance for its glow, and it did not necessarily pull through. See, I also saw Fantasy Island. That was the last movie I saw in theaters, and whoa, that makes me super depressed.
I at least ended on a decent note with The Invisible Man. I think it was my last one.
Yeah, Fantasy Island, not good.
yeah, kind of. I was just assuming there.
it's a premise is actually, I thought the premise was actually really neat, where they've gone a dark way with, you know, the Fantasy Island TV show. Very kind of almost a horror-ish in a way with the way they style it together. But the characters are dull and boring. It's not interesting. It's just not a good movie. And it's a shame that that's the last movie I saw in theaters. and I guess one other one that I'll touch on, because this came out after this all went down and it was supposed to release in theaters. I watched The Hunt, which is another not great movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what that film is. it's very much a both sides movie. Like, it doesn't want to take a stance on, you know, the far right wing people that are in it, or against the, like, it mocks both sides, and it's like, no, there's a side.
I had read that about the film, which really kind of like ruined any interest I had in it. I'm sick of that too. Like, that's like the South Park thing, right? Where it's like, you know, we're gonna make fun of both of you, a pox on both your houses, and you know, you both have your faults and this, that. It's just like, that's true, and I have problems with both sides. But one is way worse, objectively, in my opinion, at this point. Not to get too political early on here, so yeah, that's why I didn't want to see The Hunt. Really, I would rent it, I guess, but it was one of those $20 rentals, and so no.
Yeah, for some reason I got it cheaper than that, but yes, it was. It's one of those like The Invisible Man's out there for $20, and that Ben Affleck movie is out there for $20. Like, they're those premiere at home movies. That I understand why they're pushing them out at $20, and I don't necessarily mind putting $20 towards a film, especially if I was going to take my family to it, and it would cost me way more to take them to see a movie than $20. But some of these movies, maybe you don't need to push out at $20 because
it's
not worth it.
You're just used to, if you're going to watch something digitally at home, you're used to, well, if I spend the $20, then I own it. It's kind of weird to have it be a rental for $20, and then what, later it's going to be a purchase for $20? Like, I mean, I get it, and I also That's what feels weird about it. I do think, though, and we'll talk about this briefly when we talk about what I've been watching. I do think The Way Back was a purchase. I'd have to double check, but I think it was a $20 straight up purchase, which is I think the only one like that.
That might be how it should be handled. Or even if you want to put like a slight premium on it, like, hey, we're premiering it at home.
Yeah.
But it's $30, but
you own it.
You get to own it now.
Yeah.
And like people can still go see it in the theater. So I wouldn't mind that.
And there would be movies I would do it that way. Especially if, and this is like really terrifying thought down the line, like I'm really worried about one movie this year not making this year, and that is Halloween Kills. If that gets pushed back, I mean, 2020 is ruined already, but
yeah,
I'll be mad.
It can't get much worse.
That would make it just a little bit worse for me.
But has that movie, did that finish filming?
I think they filmed both Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends already, I think.
Okay, so maybe it's just production stuff that they need to do. Maybe we get lucky.
Yeah, but you know, you had stuff like the Bond movie coming out. I'm sure that was done, and they just
was supposed to be out in April. Yeah, it wasn't coming out right now. So
it's like, you know, I just don't know what to think. I don't know if we'll be going to the theaters by then or what. I'll tell you what: if we are going to the theaters by then, I would pay a premium to watch it at home.
No, and well, right now I'm worried about we both subscribe to AMC's MoviePass equivalent A-list, and they suspended that membership, thankfully. They did take my $16 and then suspended it the next day.
I see. Initially, at first, they seemed unsure what they were doing, and at first they were just like, you can suspend it yourself, and I had went and done that on my own, and then like a day later, they're like, "Yeah, we're just suspending it for everybody because they were closing the theaters." Then.
Yeah, it makes sense at that point. But they're also filing for bankruptcy, so now it's not like liquidation, complete bankruptcy, but it is like bank. Like I don't know what they're going to come back in. I don't know if all the theaters they have are going to come back when they come back. So movie going could be very different. In a couple of months.
Yeah, I think it will be if it's even happening at all. What else? What else have you seen this year?
I'll do one more here. I guess we have to touch on it since everybody knows I'm a big Kevin Smith fan.
Oh, yeah. I've been waiting to hear your thoughts on this one.
I watched Jay and Silent Bob Reboot. That is a bad movie.
It hurts a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, like what's funny is so there are some highlights. There's a really good bit that with Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
That I think is particularly well done. Heartfelt, kind of a sequel to Chasing Amy in a way. Which was nice, like really good writing. You could see that Joey Lauren Adams and Ben Affleck and Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes, like they had their heart in that.
Yeah.
Everything else in this movie just seems like, what were you doing, dude?
Super lazy. Like he's never been a great director, but like he just really just doesn't seem to give a fuck anymore.
And his
the writing has gotten lazy. Like,
yeah, like his dialogue was always what like that. That's what makes Clerks 2 so great. Like, there's good character interaction, and just good dialogue between his characters. And some of it is funny. Like some of it is just poking fun at pop culture and stuff. But other stuff is actual conversations like you feel that you would have with your friends or your coworkers. And this is just, it feels like he's trying to write that stuff for the generation that's now. And you see some of that with, Harley Quinn Smith, who's his daughter, who has starred in like his last three films. She's not a particularly great actress. She's not terrible, but she's not great. And I think he's trying to like write stuff for her, but he doesn't necessarily know how to connect with that because the dude's almost 50 years old. Like,
yeah, I don't think problem.
I think the problem,
it kills me to say this. I think the problem is Kevin Smith. Like, I think the writing just isn't there anymore. And it's so much of this movie is like, remember that joke we made 20 years ago? We're doing it again. Like, it was funny the first time. Like
we did it 20 years ago, and now I'm trying to do it, but with like this new twist on it for a younger generation. It's like it's not working, man. Like, yeah. I am really scared for Mallrats.
I have hope for like he's going back into the VSQ universe. I think he's even trying to do Clerks 3 again. Like, I hope he does better than he's been on this downward trend.
And to be fair, like I like Jay and Silent Bob, Strike Back. I think it's a fun movie. It is the weakest of his early films, though.
It's the most cartoony, like too. So yeah. It's like, I don't know.
Maybe Mallrats 2 does something. Maybe Clerks 3 does something. But I think he needs to refocus. Like,
I don't know. Yeah, like
I don't even listen to like I used to listen to his podcast, and I don't even do that anymore because it's a lot of the same shit that like we just talked about with this, where it's the same jokes, the same stories, the same over and over and over again. It's like, yeah, I've heard your Superman story and your Prince story, and like, they're great. They're hysterical, but I can go back and watch that stuff when you did it the first time.
Yeah.
Give me something new, and you don't have anything. Like, your life isn't necessarily interesting anymore. Maybe a shame.
I think Jason Mewes was trying in it, and I think that they tried to do some sweet moments between him and the daughter character. But it's just like all the problems we already mentioned above, and two, it's like them playing Jay and Silent Bob. Like, I hate to say it, they look too old to be playing those characters now. Yep. Like, they don't like Kevin Smith doesn't look right in general because he lost so much weight. Like, he just looks different to me now. He looks weird.
Yes, and like it's great that he's healthy. But
just like these, like playing these like stoner
50-year-old like, stoner drug dealers have been wearing the same shit for 35 years. Like,
yeah, it doesn't. I don't know.
That's definitely some of it. And the thing is, like, I think Jason Mewes he's not a great actor either, but he gives his heart to everything the dude tries. And like, there are roles you can give him that like you can work with his his manic kind of behaviors and his willingness to really just do anything on screen. It doesn't have to be Jay and Silent Bob. Like, we don't need that. I know that's
you're
the
gonna
tie
get more of it.
I know that's the tie, but really, like, I wish he would find another hook and refocus and get that magic back that he had.
I'm such a, you and I both are such big fans of Kevin Smith's early work. Like, I'm never going to write him off. So I'm interested to see what
he
does with these other movies. But man, has it been tough lately. Like, this wasn't Yoga Hosers bad, but it was like, you're like, oh, he's going back to the VSQ universe. He's going to finally get back on track. And it was just like, oh, man, maybe I was wrong to request that. I don't know.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, Tusk wasn't necessarily great, but it was so weird and quirky that it was like, this is kind of cool. But then Yoga Hosers was a damn nightmare.
I don't know. Yeah.
So what have you been watching, Jeff?
I've been watching a whole fuckload of shit, and we won't touch on all of it. I'll just try to stick to the highlights. How about a non-horror highlight for me this year has been a film called Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Have you seen that?
Or I have not. I've heard of it, yes.
Yeah. So, I'll give you the premise here, and just based on the premise alone, it wasn't one I was super looking forward to. So it's like the 1700s, and this artist, she gets commissioned to go do a painting of this lady who's about to get married to like this rich guy. And it's like them together on an island as she's hanging out with this lady. And as she's working on the you know, this painting or whatever, you know, this artist and the wife-to-be, like, fall in love. And they have this forbidden love affair, you know, which, you know, for one, the one lady is supposed to be getting married. And two, I'm guessing in the 1700s, being a lesbian is not super easy, right?
Right.
So it didn't sound like something I'd be like, yeah, this like period costume drama. You know, not usually my cup of tea, but you know, it got on a lot of top 10 lists and it was free on Hulu. So I'm like, I'll give it a shot. And I ended up really, really liking it. Like to the point where like I thought about it for a couple days after and I was like, you know what? I think my initial rating was too low for this. I like bumped it up half a star on Letterboxd and just kept thinking about just how goddamn good it is. And especially like the ending of it is so strong. So I'll just say, even if it doesn't sound like your cup of tea, if you have Hulu, I would say check out Portrait of a Lady on Fire. It's also in French, so that might be a problem for some people, but it's just really good drama. Like, a really good drama with a really strong ending, and an ending that will, like, stick with you. And two really, like, you know, great lead performances, and the whole movie just looks fantastic. So, that's that one. About one other non-horror one. Honestly, most of the highlights for me this year have been horror so far. I think the genre has been really strong this year, what little there's been. But another non-horror one for me was The Way Back with Ben Affleck, which I said, you know, like I think I purchased or rented, I don't know. It was $20 on Amazon. And that's like Skip-Ball Coach movie that, you know, came out right around, like, I think it came out right before shit shut down.
Yeah, like the week before, yeah.
It's on demand. Yeah. And it's directed by, I want to say, like, I can't remember the director's name right now, but the guy did, like, Warrior, he did Miracle, like, he does, like, these, he's done a lot of, like, really awesome, like, sports movies. So that's kind of what, you know, and based off the trailer, too, it's kind of what you expect here. It's like this drunk guy, you know, tries to get sober, and he, like, starts coaching this high school basketball team and, like, brings them, you know, and then there's a big game at the end, right?
Right. That's pretty much what I expected.
It's like, that's not really what this movie is at all. It's really more of a story about alcoholism, and the like sports movie stuff is barely in it and incidental and like has nothing to do. Like, it doesn't build to the big game at the end. It doesn't. And it's really about a guy who has really bad struggles with alcoholism, trying to pull himself out of it. And, you know, will he or won't he by the end? I don't want to say more to spoil it, but like, yeah, that's really what the movie is. So it's kind of like a really downbeat and like downer of a movie. And so it's like one, I think it's good and I'm happy I saw, but it's like, I don't know if I would have bought it because I don't see myself rewatching it a bunch.
Right.
But, Ben Affleck is really good in it. And you can tell, like, you know, I'm a drinker myself. So there's like moments in it where I was like, I felt seen. I was like, this dude fucking knows what he's talking about. But anyways, yeah, that's The Way Back.
Nice. That's one I still want to see. So,
the other highlights for me were like really basically horror. Color Out of Space, which I believe you saw. It's kind of Lovecraftian horror about like this fucking comet or whatever, like meteorite lands in fucking Nicolas Cage's yard. Shit starts getting real weird, and it's kind of like an alien invasion type movie, but like the alien is not humanoid in any way. It's like this thing that kind of infects everything. Think kind of like a Annihilation.
Yeah, it's very similar to that.
But then also some really cool creature effects that reminded me of The Thing. Like what the alien does to things, I think is really...
Yeah,
that's awesome.
There is a excellent effect.
The joining of things.
Yes, that is becomes a major plot point for the last act of the film, and it is gross
and really like scary. I thought like and you know, and there's I don't want to spoil it, but the thing with the alpacas. I thought Color Out of Space, like, it was a blind buy for me because I didn't want to wait to rent it. So I just bought the Blu-ray before it came out. And I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to like this or not. I really, really enjoyed it. Like, I think it was probably my favorite horror movie of the year so far.
Nice.
Another one for me, actually two horror movies that came out like this year by the same director, and they came out within like a month of each other, and I thought they're both really good. The director is Joe Bagos, and one film was VFW, which you saw that?
Yeah.
It's basically, you know, a bunch of veterans of foreign wars hanging out at their VFW posts and drinking beers, and like this girl runs in, she's like running from these guys. And it becomes like this siege narrative where like they're holed up in this bar and they're trying to fight off these like fucked up punks or whatever that are like drug dealers, or it's been a little while since I've seen
it. They were dealing some sort of like amped up meth or something that made you like zombie-ish almost. I guess like I don't know, there was like a weird apocalyptic vibe to it before that though, right? Like society had kind of broken down a bit, and the VFW was like where these guys kind of like it was their safe space.
Yeah, but it's like they don't really define what's going on. I think what it's going for is like that 80s movie where like if a movie came out in the 80s that took place in the future, it was always like Los Angeles is just like some fucking hellhole now and shit.
Everything's going to shit.
Yeah, like they're kind of doing that. Cool cast too, like Stephen Lang is like the bartender, that's the guy from Don't Breathe, he's really good in it. Yeah, like Fred Williamson, William Sadler, you have the fucking dude from Karate Kid, I can't remember his name right now, but like I don't know, it just felt like a nice cast of like smaller character actors and genre actors, like, you know, if you're like a horror fan, you're gonna know these guys from stuff. And it's like a fucking very straightforward 90-minute like kind of action horror thing. Like I really enjoyed it. Thought about buying it, but I'm like really just hoping Shudder picks it up so that I could just, you know, put it on or put on Shudder TV and it'll be playing and I'll catch the second half. It's like one of those types of movies.
Yeah, I thought it was produced by Shudder, but maybe I'm wrong on that one.
I think it will be coming to Shudder at some point. Yeah, I think you might be right. By the same director, like a month earlier, a film called Bliss came out. Did you see that
what
one?
What was that, Jeff? You cut out for a second.
Oh, yeah, you were cutting out too for a second there. I was like, what's going on? By the same director, like I think it came out a month earlier, and this is on Shudder. It's called Bliss. Have you seen it?
No.
So Bliss is like a kind of a vampire-type film. It's basically like this girl, she's like an artist, and she goes out partying one night. She has a threesome with like two of her friends, and they turn her into a vampire. And the rest of the movie is her trying to like keep her blood high going. Like it's like very much treats vampirism as like an addiction, like, you know, like she's addicted to coke or something.
Right.
And that's kind of what the movie is. That's also like really short. It's like I think it's under 90 minutes. And, you know, for like a good portion of it, I'm like, I don't know if I like this or not, or I don't know. And then it goes fucking batshit crazy during the end, like some awesome gore effects and shit going on. And really like kind of like trippy fucked up ending that kind of reminded me of Mandy a little bit. And so I ended up really enjoying Bliss as well.
So I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, I think it's still on Shudder, so. You might as well. I personally, I liked VFW more. And if I had to guess, just knowing like your taste, I think you would probably like VFW more. but it's on there, so, and it's short, so I'd say check it out. I guess one other thing I'll touch on, since it does relate to the show a bit, is, have you heard of this horror documentary called In Search of Darkness?
I have not.
So it's like a, it was like a kickstarted documentary that was supposed to like just be the definitive 80s horror documentary. And they, you know, they got it funded. It came out late last year. But it's like, as of right now, like, you can't like rent it on Amazon or anything. And so it's like you have to buy it. And to buy it is very expensive. I think it cost me $48 to buy the Blu-ray. But at the very least, it's like 4 hours long, and it really fucking, it's pretty exhaustive rundown of 80s movies. Like, I think there was one movie I was sad they didn't include, and that was The Funhouse from Tobe Hooper. Other than that, like, if it came out in the 80s, they pretty much cover it, and they like give time to like Friday the 13th 4, Friday the 13th 5. Like, they do every single Friday the 13th in this thing. Like, they do that with all the big, you know, like if it was a Halloween movie, yeah, if it was a Halloween movie or a Nightmare on Elm Street movie that came out in the 80s, they cover it. The problem is with like them covering so many films in this, it's like it really feels like, here's 2 minutes about this movie. Now we're moving on to the next movie. And they kind of just go through it by the years. Like, so, you know, they start at like 1980 and at 89.
Yeah. Where you could have maybe covered those films by series
or something. I don't know what. Yeah. It's just
maybe spent a little less time overall on all of them, but able to fit some other films in as well.
Yeah. It's just, it really is almost like they're just running down a list of everything that came out in the 80s and they're spending 2 minutes on it. It's very little like connective tissue. It does pause sometimes and like, all right, now we're going to talk about, I don't know, Final Girls for 5 minutes. You know, like they try to like tie things together, but overall though, I think it's like, you know, if you're willing to drop the money, it's pretty cool. Like, it just reminds me of like those awesome, like Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street documentaries that are already out there, except this is just covering a decade of horror in general. And they really got a lot of the people involved in these movies to talk about it. Like the directors, like the actors, like they, there's some really famous people in this, like John Carpenter's in it. They actually got Stuart Gordon and Larry Cohen in it, two pretty big directors who I hope to honor on this show at some point soon, who died, like, they died recently, but I guess they finished filming this before they passed or whatever. But anyways, it's if you got $50 in your pocket, that, you know, burning a hole in your pocket, I guess, I really hope that it does like eventually just have a wider release, but
that'd be nice to get it out there to more people. Are these the same people that are making that sci-fi documentary as well?
Yeah. So then they are, I think they just started the Kickstarter for, it's called In Search of Tomorrow. So it'll be like all like basically the same thing, but 80s sci-fi.
That could be fun.
Yeah. I thought this one was good enough that like I would definitely get that too. It's just I wish it was not so expensive, but what can I do? Right. I guess I don't know. Before we get into our reviews here, any like TV for you that you thought was good this year that you watched?
Good? I'm not sure about good, but we both watched that Tiger King.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I guess it's labeled as true crime. It's not really a true crime documentary. It's more of a look into the weird subculture of private zoos and big cat ownership. And it's an interesting look. Like, these people are batshit insane. The tie of, like, you know, Joe Exotic hiring a hitman, maybe not all that interesting in and of itself. And
How much do you think the documentary spends on that? Maybe an hour out of 7 hours? Like
the last like episode and a half, maybe, if that. It's really like it's more just this like, hey, look at these lunatics.
Yeah.
And for me, like I found entertainment there. Like it is goofy as shit. It's so crazy like looking at like these people who can hardly afford to keep food on their table, like trying to take care of big cats and run private zoos, and it's like this just looks so shoddy and unsafe, like very unsafe.
Also, where they get the food on their table from is disgusting. So
yeah,
Walmart garbage dumps.
Yeah, they get the wasted. So at least that's where Joe Exotic was getting his food from.
He fucking made a pizzeria. He like opened a restaurant at his park, and he's serving the garbage food.
He's so wrong.
I think the one dude's like, "This is the best pizza I've ever had." Like, oh my god, dude!
I mean, maybe the best pizza in Oklahoma. I've never been there, but
it was weird for me. I watched that before it became like I remember telling you guys about it like before anyone was even talking about it. I was like, "You guys seen this Tiger King show?" And you guys are like, "What the fuck is that?"
Yeah, it blew up like right after you said that, and we started watching it, and then it's kind of become this national sensation.
Yeah, it's become like a piece of Americana at this point. And it's honestly will have like a place in history because of how it hit and what it did. You know, it was like the thing like that everyone kind of gathered around culturally right after like the whole fucking world fell apart. It's really weird.
Which is awful, but completely telling about how things are.
I think it's like entertaining. I think for a lot of reasons that everyone else likes it. Like, you know, there's such characters in the show.
Yeah.
I just don't, as a piece of true crime documentary, it's not super interesting. Like, it's not.
The crime itself is like, I get why maybe you frame it that way. Like, cause true crime's a pretty big genre right now. Like, you know, people of all sorts like it. And really, how do you hook people on like, you want to see some crazy shit? We're going to do something on, like, crazy white people who own big cats. And they're hicks and completely nuts, and they run sex cults, and maybe one of these people also killed their husband and pushed him out of an airplane. Like it's the insanity that it piles on top of it is what makes it interesting. It's not really the actual crime of, you know, Joe Exotic's a moron and hired a hitman for $3,000.
Yeah. It's like, so like when I first saw it, I was like, it was good. Like it's entertaining, but you know, I'm thinking of it as a crime like documentary. But I was like, I don't know. It's fucking 7 hours long and it doesn't like really focus on that shit at all. And, like for me, earlier this year, they had a 3-part one on Netflix called Don't Fuck With Cats that, like, really fucking blew me away. And nobody talks about that one. So, I don't know.
I guess
anything else for you,
not
though?
TV-wise, but on Netflix as well. I watched The Platform. Which,
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember if that was French or Spanish. It's a foreign language horror film, though. All set in one location. I mostly liked it. It's an interesting look at humanity in general and how we act as individuals, those that are more fortunate and those that are less fortunate, how we treat them. I think it falls off the cliff with the ending. Yeah,
it really hinges upon its crazy premise. It's like the whole movie is them dealing with the premise.
They don't lay out why anybody's in this prison. Yeah. The platform is basically it's this tower jail, a cement tower jail with a giant hole in the middle of it, and this platform will come down, and on the top on the platform is all the food that you will eat for the day, and the people at the top you can eat as much as you want for 5 minutes, but the platform then lowers, and the people underneath get the next batch, and then the next, and until it gets all the way to the bottom, where, you know, probably about halfway through, there is no food left because, you know, the people at the top are gluttons and they've eaten it all.
Yeah.
So it's a a not so subtle allegory for, you know, society today. I do think that the ending, though, just like goes off the cliff. Like, really? Like, I don't know. I did not buy into like the last 10 minutes of that movie, and it kind of soured it a little bit for me because I liked the premise of it up till then.
I remember you. I thought you really liked it a lot, and when I watched it, I was like, "There's enough here, and it's interesting." But I felt like it didn't quite come together 100%. But it was interesting enough that I've thought like about including it in an upcoming episode here. Like, I was like, I could, thematically, there's something going on there. You could definitely tie it into other stuff that is, you know, anti-consumerist or anti-capitalist or whatever.
Yeah, but there's a lot to talk about with that film. And I did ultimately like it a lot. I just think the ending kind of sours it a bit.
See, I think if it would have come together stronger and had a strong ending, I think I would be closer to you on it. I was more just like, well, it's interesting, and it's one of those like crazy high concept premises, like in a way it reminded me of something like The Cube or stuff like that, where it's just like this crazy out there premise, and it's like,
yeah,
for me, I could go along with any sort of premise, but you gotta like kind of hit it out of the park at some point. I'm not sure it ever did that for me, but it's interesting, and it's on Netflix, so yeah. If you need a new horror movie, there you go.
That's it for me. Anything else on your end?
I'll be very brief, and we'll get into our feature reviews. Long story short, The Plot Against America and Better Call Saul. Everyone needs to stop sleeping on these two. Especially Better Call Saul. It has really grown into being probably the best show on TV, which is weird because it's like it's a spinoff of one of the best shows, you know, ever. And it's like slowly gotten to the point where I think there's a lot of people that would say, like, people that have stuck with it would say it's like better than Breaking Bad. I wouldn't say it's better than Breaking Bad, but it's fucking great. And it just wrapped up its fifth season, and it was great, like a great ending. And there's only one season left. I hope to God it comes out next year. And The Plot Against America was just like a one-off miniseries by David Simon, who did The Wire. And it envisions like an alternate America during World War II, one that became fascist and kind of went the direction of Germany instead of fighting Germany. Really good. It was like a 6-part just like adaptation of a novel. Nobody was talking about that one. Maybe it's just the wrong time for it, but it really feels like the right time for it, in my opinion. But maybe people aren't like in the mood for something like that right now.
Yeah, so. It's been a it's been a weird feel to everything currently. So,
yeah, that would be accurate. All right. Well, speaking of weird, why don't we bust into our feature reviews?
I am here to investigate the disappearance of a young girl. Where is Rowan Morrison?
If Rowan Morrison existed, we would know.
I suspect murder.
Sergeant, I've already
told. In the name of God, woman, what kind of mother are you that can stand by and see your own child slaughtered?
You are the fool, Mr. Harvey.
Liars. You are despicable little liars.
And we'll start with, since I'm the host and these are my picks, I get to choose the order. We're going to go chronologically here. We're going to start with The Wicker Man from 1973. And I guess a little bit why I chose these films, I guess before we like really dive into this one specifically. But this one specifically, I saw this when I was like 20 years old. I forgot where I heard of it, but I had heard of it as like this kind of gem, like this masterpiece that not enough people have seen, and blah blah blah. And I was like, all right, well, I gotta see it. And when I saw it when I was 20 years old, I was blown away by it, especially the ending, which, by the way, for every review that we do on the show, it's full spoilers. So watch the movies in advance, or if you don't care, continue to listen. But we're always going to spoil everything about the movies. So when I got to the ending of the original Wicker Man, I was completely caught off guard by the ending. Seems kind of obvious now, especially with so many movies that I've kind of like copied it since. But like the first time I saw the movie, when I got to the end and you realize that, like, no, the little girl is not the sacrifice, like the cop is, like, I was horrified by it and I felt so bad for the guy. And the ending is like very horrifying on top of it. So it was just like kind of cemented its place in my heart with that. And I was just like, this is a great fucking movie. More people need to see this. And then the reason I chose these as our, like, or my films for this month and for our first episode is, one, we're premiering in May, and, you know, May 1st is May Day, which is like takes place in this film. So I thought kind of fitting there. But mainly, the reason I chose these films is because it was an excuse for me to finally see the remake from 2006. Which ended up, this all ended up being a very bad idea, but, because when you think about it, like, I think a good, like, if we're gonna have a battle between two films and pick a winner at the end of this, I think the better pairing would have been The Wicker Man from 1973 versus Midsommar from 2019.
Yeah,
because I think there, then you have a matchup.
There are a lot of,
yeah,
there are a lot of correlations between the two, and
oh, for sure, there would be no Midsommar without The Wicker Man.
Exactly. Yes.
But again, the whole, like, the reason these ended up being my picks is I wanted an excuse to watch the crazy Nick Cage Wicker Man, which we'll get to in a minute. Let's start with The Wicker Man from 1973. This is directed by Robin Hardy from a screenplay by his, like, working partner, Anthony Schaefer. It's based on a novel called Ritual by David Pinner. And the basic story of this is this cop goes to this, like, Scottish island, and he's, like, looking for a missing girl. And, you know, shortly after he arrives there, he realizes that, like, things are a little weird at this island. And that, you know, they're not Christians. Like, the people on this island are practicing paganism. And, you know, like, so, like, they're very different from him. He's, like, this very conservative, like, kind of tightly wound character who's, like, very, you know, very religious into Christianity. And so the stuff he's seeing on this island is kind of, like, blowing his mind as he's trying to get to the bottom of the mystery here. And so, of course, it's, like, this island is a crazy cult, and they're planning evil shit. And, like I've already alluded to, they basically have lured this man to the island so they could sacrifice him, but you don't know that along the way. Was this your first time seeing The Wicker Man?
Yeah, it's, you know, it starts out as just a mystery, almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it actually does a really good job of just throwing you right into it. Like, there's no setup. Like, he lands with his little airplane, and you know things are weird right from the moment that he lands. Like, he's trying to get the dinghy brought over, and they're just flat out ignoring him. And then when he gets there, like, things are weird. Like, they're, like, kind of being really, really bouncy back and forth and shady with him, like
just playing games, yeah, with him.
Yeah, like, so it sets up the mystery that, all right, I think these people know what happened to this girl.
Yeah,
but what's going on here? And then it starts getting, like, even weirder. Like, it becomes like this weird, you know, there's these weird sex rituals and, like, group sex going on in a field, and
yeah,
And the innkeeper's daughter is like singing to him and stripping in her own bedroom and like urging him to come to her room.
Have sex.
And it's like, it's really like, it's just bonkers. It's just like weirdly out there for what you're expecting. And you're kind of along the ride with this guy. Who doesn't seem like, I mean, he seems like a nice guy, right? Like he's a cop. He's out looking for this lost girl. And this place seems weird.
Exactly. Although, again, so like, is this your first time watching this one?
Yeah, I had not seen it previously.
So it's weird for me because, like I said, the first time it hit me really hard because I felt bad for this guy. I think there's a reading of it, too, though, when I was watching it this time. I'm like, this guy's kind of a bigot. Like, he's kind of like, he's going to some place where he's in the very small minority, you know? He's the only one there that's not like the other people. And he's, like, telling everyone that the way that they run their island and their religion is fucked, and they have to do it like how he does it. It's like, dude, you're a guest here. And so all is like, is like wagging his finger at them.
Yeah, they're kind of like,
I mean, ultimately he's right because they're fucking nuts and they fucking kill him, but like, you don't know that and he doesn't know that. So like early on, it's just like this dude going to another country, essentially going, yeah, well, the way you guys do things is wrong, and you guys are sinful because you have sex and this and that. And you should be like,
which, yeah, like there is, and that's not a bad read. I do think like he sets it up very early on though. Like, you are still part of the, you know, the nation here, and
yeah,
like, that is why I'm here. Like, not that you know, justifies his approach to the puritanical. Approach that he has.
It's like his judgment. Yeah, he's being like judgmental.
Yeah, he's very judgmental. And honestly, they're not judgmental of him. And there are tests along the way that, in fact, the entire thing is a giant test for him. Right up until the end, because if he had like answered the innkeeper's call. The innkeeper's daughter's call, like they would have sent him.
You wouldn't have been the right.
Right. Like, yeah, he would not have been the one to sacrifice. So ultimately his approach did not work out for him. But also these people are completely crazy, including the, Lord Summer Isle, played by Christopher Lee, who is fantastic here.
He's great.
Like it's just chewing scenery, and it's fantastic. He is a great foil for the police sergeant, Sergeant Howie. He plays well because he is this eccentric, very thoughtful, almost philosophical pagan in a way, playing to the opposite of the police officer.
Yeah, he's really good in it. And, like, for him, this was kind of... He had done a bunch of, like, I think he was doing the Hammer horror films or whatever before this.
Sounds right.
Like, I think he felt like this was, like, this was a step up for him. Like, this was, like, him playing a more dramatic role and doing something a little different. And he's really good. I guess the other thing I wanted to ask you, since this was your first time watching it, is... Like, were you taken along by the mystery in terms of, like, did you see the ending coming? Or were you just like, well, what the fuck is going on
here? I didn't know how the ending was coming, but my guess the whole way was that, he was going to end up inside.
Oh, so you did think that, like, he was going to be the sacrifice or you had somehow...
Well, and...
It was gonna be bad for him at the end? Or
yeah, I figured, knowing... And really, my exposure to this, and I hadn't seen the other Wicker Man, which we'll touch on shortly. I hadn't seen that either, but I'd known enough about that because that movie is painted as this crazy Cage movie. And so clips of it have circulated on the internet for years.
So that was probably kind of a clue to you.
Yeah, too, right? That like, yeah. Oh, he, things are going to go wrong for this dude. I don't think he's getting off the island, and you know, knowing what a Wicker Man is, he's going to end up in there at some point, and there's going to be a big bonfire.
I knew nothing. This was like 20 years ago when I first saw it. I knew nothing. I don't know what a Wicker Man is. I don't know any of this shit. Like, I was just like totally along for the ride. And even though it's like a weird, like, the mystery kind of like falls apart real quick because you're just like, what the fuck? Like, he's looking for this girl, Rowan Morrison, and he like meets the mom. And then the mom's like, yeah, well, that's not my daughter. And you're just like, what the fuck? And then she's like, no, this is my daughter. And he talks to the daughter, and the daughter's like, oh yeah, I know Rowan. Rowan's a hare, like a rabbit. Like, what? And so like immediately you're just like, you kind of get the feeling, like you said, that like everyone is like fucking with him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I actually have a note about that where I wrote it's fun because he's such a tightwad, but it's also anxiety inducing. Because you can imagine being in a situation and you want to know what's going on. Like,
right. And then just thinking, it's like, he doesn't really say anything about, at least in the version I watched, which I believe was the original theatrical version. I don't remember him saying anything when he kind of walks outside and, you know, everybody's fucking out there.
it's like at night, right? Like,
yeah.
He's like walking to his room or some shit or.
Yeah. Well, because like the inside of the bar, like they're, you know, they're singing, and it's a rather bawdy song about the innkeeper's daughter.
I love the music in this, by the way.
It's a very, very good soundtrack. But like, he goes outside and he's just like, he's disturbed by it because it's obviously against whatever he values, but he doesn't necessarily call them out on it. At some point, they do push him over the edge where he just starts, like, you know, he's yelling at the school teacher about what they're teaching and yelling at Lord Summer Isle. And he then becomes very judgmental. But I think it was almost because, like, these people were fucking with him to the point where he snapped. And as I said, it's all a big test to see if he is the you know, the pure one to be sacrificed. Mm. And in doing so, like they're trying to push him, like tempt him almost, like it's like a last temptation of Christ type thing where it's, hey, we're gonna throw boobs at you, we're gonna throw like penises at you, we're gonna throw chicks dancing around a pole naked at you. Like, at some point, like your dick's gonna go off and you're gonna go off, right, dude? No. Like, he keeps it in his pants and
he comes close though. Like, I think he wants to go.
Yeah,
yeah. Especially because the actress, whatever, she's really pretty. Like,
yes, the innkeeper's daughter is beautiful, beautiful woman. Ultimately, he's like able to you know, abstain, and that dooms him.
Some wonderfully creepy stuff early on. I blurted out there, I love the music. It's kind of interesting because, like, first and foremost, this is a horror movie, but it's also like, it's kind of a mystery and it's kind of a musical too, because it does stop to do songs for you a bunch. And one part I really, really loved early on is the maypole scene where, like, they're doing that ceremony about the maypole and like, yep. One guy's like singing. And it's a song that's like, you know, and from that grave there grew a tree, and from that tree there grew a fruit. Like, it keeps going like that.
Yeah,
I don't know
faster
why.
And faster.
I love that song. I think that song is like fucking awesome. I think the way that like scene is shot is awesome. Just the way that the camera moves and the way it cuts between like fucking Howie walking around and like just then cutting to like this dude running the ceremony. I think it's like right after that. The part where he goes into the school is like genuinely creepy to me. Like, where he's like, he finds Rowan Morrison's desk and they open it, and it's like there's just like a beetle in the desk, like with like a nail, and it's like tied to the nail. And isn't the little girl like, she's like, yeah, he's gonna keep like winding himself up like that until he's just completely wrapped around the nail. And he's just like, well, why on earth would you do that? You know, like, I don't know. I found that whole scene really creepy. And of course, they like redo it in Wicker Man. It's nowhere near as good.
And it's interesting to look at it because, like you said, he does become very judgmental and almost a bigot in a way for how he's approaching their religion. But it is like weird shit like this. That's the shit that pushes you towards going, like, kind of siding with him the film, because it's like, but you people are sick and fucking weird. And
like that thing, like, what's the test there? There's no test to that. It was just like just fucking creepy. Like,
yeah.
When Lee is introduced, he kind of gives a backstory to the island, which I thought was really interesting, and I don't think I ever really paid attention to until this time. Did you catch what he basically says here? He's like, basically, Lee says that his grandfather used paganism as like a trick to get the people on the island to work for him. But he says that like his father was born into it, and he was born into it. And even though he knows that, like, his grandpa, like, basically used these people and didn't believe in the paganism, like, Lee claims, at least, that he actually really believes in it, which is just, it's just interesting. I thought it was interesting, because it's, like, it's kind of an admission that all this religious stuff is bullshit, but, it, you know, they use it as a means to an end, but then now our main bad guy believes in it, so.
Right, so it sets it up that, hey, maybe this was, you know, religion can be used as a tool to put people in line. And we've seen throughout history that that's something that can happen. But also that, like, you know, those in power can become enraptured with it. Whether it's real or not is different matter. But when those people start believing, then you get really fanatical societies and shit like this happens.
And then, you know, I think it does sag a little bit for a little there where it is doing like the, you know, her trying to tempt him and this and that. And you're like kind of following along this mystery that at some point you like realize that like, they're in total control. He's never going to find this girl unless they want her to find him or whatever. And so, but then, like, I'd say, like, the last, like, 20 minutes of this thing are great. Like, I'm just, like, completely on board. It gets, you know, it's been weird the whole way, but it starts to get super weird. Like,
yeah, it gets super weird. And then, like, you know, there's the whole parade and,
yeah,
and the weird, like, you know, we might chop off your head sword thing.
Oh, God, it's a great sequence, yeah.
And the finally the reveal of Rowan and you know, Sergeant Howie, like, taking things into his own hands, because it's another test at that point for him to go and save her to prove that he is, like, the pure of heart and that's what he's there for. And you're like, at that point it takes, like, it's a little bit of a twist. It's like, oh shit, like, they do have the girl, they've known all this time, but okay, like, are they gonna kill her? Like, oh, he got her away, all right. And then you still figure, like, you're not gonna name a movie The Wicker Man without somebody getting roasted in a Wicker Man. So at that point, like, I'm still thinking, like, he's gonna end up bad, but maybe he saves the girl and is able to get her off the island or something. But it turns out that, like, the girl's been in on it the entire fucking
time. Yeah, they're like, good job. They, like, tell her, like, you know, you did your job well, blah, blah, blah. And then I, like, still, every time I see the movie, it gives me chills when he sees the Wicker Man and realizes what's happening. And he's like, oh, God! Oh, Jesus Christ! Like, the way he screams, it, like, fucking gives me chills. I'm like, the dude is giving a fucking solid performance here at the end. But yeah, and everything.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you know, all right, they're throwing me in that. This ain't ending good for me.
And the guy does a good job of playing it up, like reacting how you imagine a real person might, like, and then he, like, tries to, like, reason with them, and he's just like, the reason your crops died, it's because this island isn't supposed to grow apples. Like, he's, like, trying to, like, you know, he's going through all the things that you would do. Like, you don't have to do this. You have to understand that, like, what you're doing isn't going to, you know, you're not going to, it's not going to fix anything.
Right.
Yeah, but for me, everything from, like, when he goes to try to get off the island, like, he tries to escape, like, get back on his plane, and it's been sabotaged. And then the music gets all super creepy, and all these fucking people pop up with masks and shit. Like, these animal masks, and I feel like this has been copied a bunch in other movies since. And they just look creepy as fuck, all these people in the costumes and shit. I really love, like, the last...
The bear shoot, the... it's all, like, it's all really well done. Like, the animal masks, and there's the... When he goes back to start researching the... Like, the inspecting the houses to find Rowan, and they redo this scene in the remake as well, but he goes in, he rips off the masks of the little girls, and then he opens the closet, and, like, one just falls out. It's just so well done, and, like, and you kind of go along with the panic that is going through him at that point, because everything is shot so, like, manically, and
that's when it finally, like, the pacing, like, really picks up. Like, it's been a very slow, kind of, like, chill movie with, like, these folksy songs and shit, and then all of a sudden it's, like, he's running around in a panic all over fucking town, and this parade's going on and shit. Like, I don't know, it just, like, really springs to life for the ending, which, you know, I think the whole ending in general is really strong on this film. Yeah. Just want to touch on a couple things before we wrap up and rate it. You and I did watch different versions of this. You watched, I believe to be the original theatrical cut, which is like 88 minutes.
Yeah, it was short, yeah.
I watched it's called the final cut. It's like 94 minutes. There's differences. Like, for instance, the very opening shot of the one that you saw and the one that I've seen before, like the one I've seen all my life up until now, is like, yeah, he's like the dude arriving in his plane, like, you know, getting in his plane and going to this island. And the version I saw for, like, this review, because I bought a Blu-ray and it was, like, the only Blu-ray available, like, starts off with him, like, there's a scene of him in church, like, just going to mass and getting the Eucharist and shit. And it's like, okay, well, and then it just cuts to, like, the beginning that, you know, you saw and I knew, and it's just like, I don't feel like I really added anything.
No, because they establish throughout the film
that he's, like, religious. Like, that's, know, all that's doing is that he's a Christian, and it's like they very much communicate that in the film. It's honestly, I feel like every change that is in this final cut makes it movie slightly not as good as the one I've known in my whole life and the one that you watched. I just feel like the original is the way to go, in my opinion. And in fact, like, when Robin Hardy turned in this cut, I believe it was Roger Corman suggested cutting about 10 minutes from the film. And that's how we got the theatrical version that, you know, that you saw. And it's in my opinion, Corman was right. Corman is known for efficiency. And yeah, he, like, the cut he did was, in my opinion, the better version. And I guess they rearrange things a little bit in the one I saw. I'm like, I think, like, the part where she tries to seduce him happens on a different night or some shit. But yeah, there was a weird scene where, like, Christopher Lee's outside at night, and there's, like, he's standing by this tree, and there's, like, a snail on the tree. Was that your version? No. Okay. And it's completely worth the scene. And it was added here. It actually looks bad. They weren't able to, like, to restore it that well. And it's just, yeah, any of the changes that they made for, like, the longer cut is not worth it. It's better to be shorter, I think, in this one. Another interesting thing that popped up for me in my research is Robin Hardy, the director of this, didn't really do a whole lot after, but amazingly, he did a sequel to this in, like, 2011 called The Wicker Tree that has Christopher Lee in it. And if I watched the trailer and I was like, this looks interesting. Huh. I guess it was terrible. Like, it got really bad reviews.
And IMDb has it rated at 3.8 out of 10.
Yeah. It looked cool, though. Like, the trailer, and I was like, damn, like, I can't believe, one, I've never heard of this. And two, they got, like, Christopher Lee back in this role. Like, that's fucking crazy. I would be interested in watching it one day, but, yeah, it did not do good in reviews. And, interestingly enough, Hardy wanted to do a third and, like, make it a trilogy. And he was going to call the final one The Wrath of the Gods. And he tried, I think, kickstarting it, and it didn't reach its goal, and he died shortly thereafter. But one day, maybe I might check out The Wicker Man. I am a big enough fan of this original.
I think I saw The Wicker. I have not seen this movie, but I think I saw it available on some streaming service or something. So you might be able to get a rental for it.
Yeah, I'm sure you could rent the Wicker Tree, but I might one day. I probably won't make it a review for this show, but anyways, my final thoughts on this is I just think it's a really unique movie. Like, again, it's like kind of horror, mystery, musical, strange kind of hippie vibe to it, with a hell of an ending. So this one's always been kind of special for me since I first saw it. And for my rating, I'm going to go with an 8. Well, I should mention, we're doing a new rating system. It's 0 to 10, and I'm going to go with an 8 out of 10 for the original Wicker Man from 1973.
I liked it. I don't think as much as you. And some of this just comes from, I hadn't seen it. You know, I did not see it.
You don't have a connection to it. Yeah.
I don't have the connection. I saw Midsommar last year, and I adored that movie. And there are definite connections, like there are definite inspirations in Midsommar here that came from this movie. You know, lots of the daylight shots, and like even down to like the bear suit.
Yeah.
that they put a boyfriend in at the end, and then, you know, lighting up it's not a wicker man, but it is a wicker pyramid of sorts in that movie. I don't know, I connected a little more with that one. I think maybe if I had seen these reversed, I would have had a deeper appreciation for it. But I like it. I found it to be a good movie. I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10. It's definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, I do think that had I seen Midsommar before I saw the original Wicker Man, I think I'd still really love the original Wicker Man, but
it's good.
I think, again, if you put them in a head-to-head matchup, like if I did that for this episode, I don't know who comes out the winner for me, man. Like, it'd be real tough.
They're two different films. Like, the Midsommar is definitely a more modern film. Like, the Wicker Man at points feels like a 1973 movie. I think that works in its benefit because we're going to, you know, the next movie we're going to touch on is a more modern retelling of this story. But I think that it works here. The 1973 vibe, the style of clothing that the people are wearing, the kind of rustic and detached nature of the village, and it feels like it's a place in time. And I think it works for it. It's, you know, I just don't have that connection to it, but it's definitely worth a watch.
All right, so I say Wicker Man 1973 is an 8. Chris says it is a 6. And we're about to dive into the Wicker Man 2006.
What is it? What is it? What is that? What is that? What is it? Oh, no, not the bees! Not the bees! Ah! Oh, no, my eyes! Ah!
This is the film that I really wanted to watch for this episode. I was actually super excited to watch this. Written and directed by Neil LaBute, who at the time that this film came out, or a little bit before, he was like a hot up-and-coming director. Like, people thought he was going to be a big deal. He had done a film called In the Company of Men, which was based on a play that he wrote. He did a film I remember really liking at the time. I have not seen it since, but it's called Your Friends and Neighbors. And he's done stuff since, but like this was kind of, in my opinion, a dividing line in his career. From he was this big, like, you know, people would group him with people like Paul Thomas Anderson and shit, right? Like, this guy was going to be hot shit. And then this film came out, and, you know, he still does stuff, but, you know, like, he did have actually a movie after this I liked called Lakeview Terrace. I don't know if you remember that one.
Not off the top of my head, no.
But yeah, this was this was the film that, like, changed the course of his career. And this movie is, like, famous. Like, internet famous. Known as one of the worst movies of all time. And it's supposed to be, like, one of the most crazy Cage performances of all time. It was, like, memed to hell. And, like, you know, in the early days of YouTube, there was, like, super cuts of all the crazy shit in this movie that got, like, you know, tons of views, right? Like, this movie has a reputation coming before it now, and it's like, I went into it with those expectations that it was going to be so bad it's good, and, you know, just completely bonkers, and I thought I could, you know, have a few beers and have fun with it that way. And I'm sad to say, like, this was a really poor choice. Like, I think this movie is not wacky and crazy like its reputation. Like, it doesn't live up to its reputation at all. And it kind of takes everything that was fun and good about the original Wicker Man and, like, just saps all that stuff out of it. Like, it's not charming. It doesn't have the music. It doesn't have that, like, weird hippie, like, horror in the daylight vibe. In fact, it's very gray looking throughout the whole movie. We knew it was going to be bad. This was a letdown for me.
Yeah, because, well, one, we should maybe, you know, throw this out there that the big piece of this is the change on the island is that instead of apples, it's honey.
Yeah.
And with honey comes bees. And the big scene that everyone knows from this movie, because it's been memed to death and,
yeah,
and video clips have been shown, is not even in the fucking film.
Exactly. All right. So you saw the same version as I did.
Yeah. I saw the regular theatrical cut, 102 minutes long. Evidently the bees,
yeah.
Oh no, not the bees. Is in a director's cut, which,
yeah,
I sure as shit don't want to spend any time going and watching that one after seeing this.
Well, look, if I had known that, I would have rented the director's cut, and I did see that on Amazon if you scrolled further, but it was for buy only, and I was not spending, yes, $14.99 to watch the.
Exactly. This was a $3 rental versus a $15 purchase for a movie that I was pretty sure I was not going to be in love with.
Yeah. And you know what I think that is? Like, it seems like a really dishonest thing for the internet to do. Like, cause honestly, it's like, that was a cut scene. So, like, maybe they cut it cause they thought it didn't work, you know? So why are you making fun of this movie for this scene?
Right.
Here's my, and I don't know the answer to this. Here's what I think happened. Remember the time that this came out, 2006, when a movie came to DVD back then, it was very common that it would be, this is the director's cut, and it would be somehow be different,
yep,
from the theatrical version, and it would sell copies. Like, people were into that back then. Just, yep, like,
they still do it occasionally. Like, you'll get the unrated cut, but yeah, it was very prominent. Like, you had to be careful which one you were buying, because you could end up with a completely different cut of the film.
It's like
when you went to go purchase it.
If you go to buy like Rob Zombie's Halloween, you're gonna get the unrated cut, because that's like that's just how they released it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think in my like again, this is just me like thinking about this historically, is that that's why. And so the version that most people saw was the DVD version, and that was probably the alternate cut. The other like difference is at the very end of this one, there's a scene that's like 6 months later that I think is awful, where it's like Lily Sobieski and the other girl like in this bar, like trying to pick up guys, and you're just like, oh, they're going to do it again, right? But yeah. Like,
is it James Franco?
Yeah, that's right. And I was just like, I thought it was awful. Like, it's just such a,
it's not needed.
Predictable, like. It's such a standard like trope. Like,
What works so well about the original ending is that it ends with
just
this guy burning to death in this thing, and like that's it. Then it cuts to credits, this nice happy music roll, and like you're left with the holy fuck! I just watched somebody be executed by a bunch of lunatics.
Yeah, like instead, I think it's just like everyone's like standing there like holding hands or something, and singing.
Yeah.
Like you see the Wicker Man fall. And it just zooms in on the sun, at least like the version I watched.
Yeah,
that's it. Like that's the end. And
with this one, like you still kind of you get that ending, right, where Nick Cage is in the Wicker Man, and he roasts to death. But yeah, it's not over. Then like it continues, and it's like we don't need it because they've set up much like that scene you said in the director's cut of the original Wicker Man at the beginning. This is similar to that. You've already set up that this is something that this society does.
It's redundant, yeah.
Yeah, like you don't need it again because we know they're going to do it again.
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, that's just like the capper on the end of all the problems with this.
About the beginning?
Like, yes. That's what I wanted to start with is the beginning. So, the opening's different.
Very different. Like instead of just throwing, you know, Nick Cage's detective guy directly into the shit, like, you know, and not giving a backstory to why he's doing this. Like, well, you know, you don't need a backstory to why a cop is looking for a missing kid. It's not necessary.
It's his job, right? Like that's his case that he's working on. That's kind of it. That's all you need.
They spend 15 minutes like setting up backstory for Nick Cage and his mental problems and you know, maybe these people, he tried to save some people that were in a car and they may have burned to death, and he's not sure. Yeah. He's questioning himself.
It's like, does that ever actually tie in? Cause like it functions, as far as I could tell, as like just this thing that happened that was horrible. And like, he, you know, it's just to set up his character as like, you know, he's dealing with that. He's got some issues, but it's like they also suggest that like something supernatural happened, because like they're like, yeah, there were no bodies recovered from this accident or whatever. Like, did you catch that part where they're like telling him that?
Yeah,
so like, it's like then you're like, oh, what is this gonna mean? Like, do they ever explain it beyond that, or is that it?
No, it's used as a crutch throughout the rest of the film to like kind of make Nick Cage's character seem like he's maybe not all there. Like, he's seeing things, because the little girl in the car is his daughter, which...
Yeah, you know, he's picturing that. Like, I can get behind that, that's fine, but, like,
so,
what is the function of any of that? Like, and it doesn't...
There's no point.
Like, the way you do that, I guess you're right, it's to make him seem like he's off, but, like, it would just been better if they didn't add that, like, as a... First, leave it out at all, but two, don't suggest there's like a supernatural angle to it.
Cause right.
Like, then it sets up the expectation that's going to play into the film somehow. It's never explained or anything. Like,
and that's a shame here, because you can take that. Like, they could have taken it doesn't have to be supernatural necessarily, but
something like the people set it up to fuck with him, to somehow set him on the path.
Or you could have totally twisted this another way and go with, you know, these people, he's seeing these people, they never existed, so this girl he's looking for doesn't fucking exist, and he's just harassing these people on this island, Like, you could have gone like different ways with it, but they try to stick pretty true to what they this do. Film is.
Ultimately,
without all the weirdness.
Like, yeah, they like stick pretty close to like to what the Wicker Man was, but they like were like, what if we redid that as a modern film and like just sucked all the joy out of it, and it like that would just be like a crappy remake. Then it's like he tries to make some changes, and I just don't think they amount to like that. Opening accident has nothing to do with anything, and then now like they tie into like he knows one of the villagers here or whatever, and that's because like his wife ran off on him, and she actually grew up on this island, right? And now the island is like off of the coast of Washington, right?
It's
like
yep, it's Pacific Northwest, Northwest,
yeah. And she like I guess grew up on this island, so she like went back there, and so like while he's investigating it and shit, like you know,
when that's how he gets drawn out there, right? Because like he gets the letter from his
letter, yeah.
And says like, hey, my daughter's missing. Not necessarily telling him, but it's his daughter. I don't think in the letter. Like so he finds that out later.
They like try to tie the missing girl way closer to him. Like,
yep.
You know, very strong personal connection. At some point, you find out it's his daughter or whatever. But again, it's like I would be fine with it, I guess. Like it's fine, but I just don't feel like it really. None of it really. Because again, you go back to his job is he's a cop. And that's what's fine. And right. Like what made the original interesting, it was not his motivation, but the fact that of who he was. Like he got sucked into this thing because he's a straight laced conservative cop boy. Like
that's what doesn't make sense here, right? So like they play off the fact that he is, you know, they play off the fact that Sergeant Howie in the original is a virgin. And like he is pure of heart and he is pure of body and like he is the pure sacrifice.
And they factor that into like just like they stick to the story in that. It's just like, okay, he's trying to solve shit and his character's revealed by how he reacts to the people. Like
right.
It's all you really need. And like I just don't think the stuff they added here, like, okay, all right, he has a reason now he's going back or whatever.
But also, but like, why
his job?
Why does he like? I didn't quite understand the motivation for them sacrificing. Like, I understood Lord Summerisle's idea totally behind, like, and, like
yeah.
We need somebody pure of body and mind, and like you're it. Hey, you win. You passed our test. Like, I don't understand why Nick Cage is like selected here, other than like, hey, up my daughter, and so you're the dad of one of our citizens. So you can die, I guess. Like,
do they even give that much, or is it just like they just picked him? Like
they do. So the lady, Sister Summerisle, because that's the other thing, right? This entire it's been gender flipped. Not Nicolas Cage's character, but the island itself has been gender swapped. Where in the original, it was men that were kind of in charge of everything and running the island and.
You had a Lord Summerisle,
yeah.
Played by Lee, and then here it's like
yeah, Ellen Burstyn as Sister Summerisle, yeah, and
Ellen Burstyn,
yeah. it's a matriarchy instead of a patriarchy here,
and it's just kind of like, yeah, what if we did this but misogyny? Because it's just kind of like, well, the society is like man hating, but the point of the film is like these women are bitches, like.
And in fact, he even says that.
Yeah. And I think that is like Neil LaBute as a director and writer, you know, well before this, like people thought he had a very pessimistic and misanthropic view of people in the world. Like he, in his stories, the people who are the most callous and evil always win, you know? But here it's like very misogynistic bent to it all, so it's not just misanthropy, it's like women are bad, you know. And I think that's might have been part of what killed his career is this thing was a fucking dud, and nobody cared, and most people thought it was all like it was famously bad. So
like none of it works. It doesn't have the weirdness to it. Like there, I don't want to say it doesn't have anything. Like there's about 5 minutes of this film where I'm like, oh shit, all right, it's turning. Like this has been a fucking shit show for over an hour, but it's making a turn. Nick Cage is turning it on. He like starts yelling at like, why is it burned? Why is it burned? Like,
I've totally, I must have missed that part because I like that's the one part I guess where he's acting like crazy Cage. That's still in this one.
And then he starts going a little like, then he starts like running around through the town. He's doing the searching for Rowan, like how he does. And it's like, okay, like, and he's acting completely insane, like throwing kids to the side, punching people. He punches the one sister in the face, like,
yeah.
It's dumb.
He's in the bear suit and he punches the one girl. Yeah.
So it's like, all right, it's finally getting there. And then all of a sudden it comes to a screeching halt. It's like, oh, okay. You had it going. You had it going for 5 minutes. you couldn't keep the nutso going because that's what made, you know, that's what works so well on The Wicker Man, the original, is that change of pace. Like it's slow. It's a slow mystery burn up until where, you know, he starts to panic and starts rushing through the town and the music ramps up. That doesn't happen here except for those 5 minutes. And then it reaches a crescendo.
It's like, I'd say like 90 to 95% of this movie is a very like dull, drab retread of the original. Like, And if you take the original and you remove stuff like the maypole scene, or you take the desk scene and instead now it's a jump scare where the bird flies out of it.
Yep.
You just kind of suck everything that was great about that movie out of this. And then, so like, it's just like a lame, like, again, like I said at the top, it's like, it's just a really poor remake. Like, I guess competently made in a film, like technically it's competent, I guess, you know.
There are some, especially in like the last act of the film, there are some like wonderful shots. If you were to freeze frame, it would make beautiful, like creepy looking stills. But it just doesn't work as a lot as a moving picture.
I think, you know, you cut to the heart of it if you talk about Cage here, which like I love Cage as an actor. Like, this has kind of been established from Movie Dudes days. Like, I respect the guy a lot. I gave him Best Actor 1 year for Mandy. He's like, I think he's fine in this, honestly. Like, he's
reserved.
He's not super normal. Yeah, I guess there's the part that I somehow missed, which is a bad sign when I'm watching a movie for the first time. I'm so bored, I miss a part of it. But for the most part, he's just like totally normal. Like, he just comes across as like a normal cop guy who's trying to get to the bottom of something.
And when that scene that you missed happens, it feels right. Like, it's all right now that the film is going to take this turn. It's going to get to this. It's going to keep ramping up. You're going to start seeing crazier and crazier stuff. The parade's going to happen. It's all going to be, you're going to be involved in all of this, and he's going to keep go, because that's what the character should do, is keep ramping up until finally the reveal.
And you have Cage, use him, like, give, make him, like, that's the thing that Panos Cosmatos got about Cage and Mandy, is like, he did everything that's Cage's strengths. Like, he gave Cage real crazy shit to do at points in that movie, you know. I don't know, but again, it's like, you put the B scene in this, I don't think it saves the movie at all, and I don't think it makes it so...
It doesn't make it any worse. It can't make it any worse.
And honestly, like, I've watched the B scene a couple times, I'm like, I don't know, dude, that's kind of how you would react, right? Like, you'd be like, oh, fuck, not the bee! Like, I don't want any bunch of fucking bees coming into a...
Since, like, he's allergic to them. Like, they established that in the film. Like he almost dies. He has the EpiPen. He's been trying to stick himself with it, and he passes out before that. But yeah, like they establish he's deathly afraid of bees because he could die from them. And also, hey, like, so when they finally they capture him and they kind of like reveal, hey, we're gonna sacrifice you. you're the sacrifice, dude. They like grab onto him, and then they evidently break his legs because like they. But it's all done off scene, like
it's done
like,
with voiceover. It's done in voiceover, so like they cut out this whole part with the bees and shit, and it goes straight from like him finding out what's happening to like they show him like in the procession carrying him to the Wicker Man, like they're carrying him in a blanket, right? And in this procession, then they're doing the scene that you missed in voiceover, where he's like, "Oh God," and they're like fucking breaking his legs and shit. And that is pretty sloppy in my opinion.
It's
like
it's so bad.
Like it doesn't like movies sometimes do something like that where it's like we cut to the next scene and then you're kind of hearing what happened, or like, but it feels like they're somehow trying to fix a cut scene. And it just comes off sloppy.
Sure, and you don't need it. Like you can still carry Cage. Like you know, they showed enough that they were beating him. They could still carry Cage and tie him upside down and hoist him into the Wicker Man. Like you don't need to like do the bad, you know, leg breaking sounds and have him screaming over it. We know he was disembodied
from the film. Like, right. Like where are the sounds coming from?
But like while they're carrying him, it's not like it's even at a black screen. It's like you're seeing this procession of them carrying him to the Wicker Man. While this stuff is going on, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I actually did not write that down in my notes, but I remember thinking it when I watched it, where I was just like, what the fuck? Like, why are they like... It honestly feels like you sit through this really dull movie, and then you get to the part where it's about to get exciting, and then it's like, wait, why are you doing yada 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 to the part that I waited to see?
Exactly.
You know,
it's infuriating. It's like it's all right. You ramped up Cage. You get him going. He's acting a little nuts, and then you screech it to a halt. And then we don't even get the satisfaction of like what you know some horror fans want to see, which is like the violence and gore. Like, hey. You know, you could throw criticisms that that's, you know, what I came out of this going, I wish I saw them break his legs, like, but nothing else in this movie works, and you took away what might have at least been a saving grace for it, raised it a point.
Yeah, it's not, like, and then it just goes to an ending that is just, like, kind of, like, back to the rest of the film, a really dull version of what we've already seen, but they did add one little wrinkle to it, which was you find out that this whole thing was a long game, like a real long game. Like the day that he met his wife. So you're talking 15 years ago or whatever, right? The whole time he had been marked as like, as pegged as the mark here. You know what I mean? Like,
right. It's a potential sacrifice in case the bee crop ever goes bad.
Which I'm like, okay, but that's like a super long game. Yeah, and that's the one thing too. Other thing too, I'm like, how does the bee crop quite like? I don't know how that works. I thought it was like super controlled. So I don't know. I guess I don't know enough about how like fucking beekeeping and shit works. But
I don't know.
I don't think of honey as like a crop. I mean, I guess it is, right? I don't know.
I mean, it has to be harvested, and I guess like if your bees die because it's too cold or something. I guess like there are factors that could play into it
for sure,
but it just makes more sense that like it made more sense that like the apple crop failed, and that's what you know was the lifeblood of this island. Instead, it's like you know the honey's the lifeblood. And everybody understands how like an orchard can fail or like a planted crop can fail. The fact that like these animals that you're controlling.
Yeah, that's like
we don't understand it enough. It's too complicated.
Yeah. It just feels like it feels like a situation you should be able to control. Also, like again, that's a perfect example of the rest of the film. Like it's different. I give you credit. It's different, but like, what are we adding here? What's the point? Like bees are not cinematically scary, and I think that's probably why people laugh at the part at the end. It's like bees aren't scary to watch, but I don't know. I just the whole thing. I knew it was gonna be bad, but I did not expect it to be this disappointing, dude. Like it just—it's
really bad.
It doesn't live up to its reputation, which makes me sad. And I see no reason why. Like, I would say this is an avoid, no matter what.
This isn't even what, like, as you said at the top, like, we're at the very least we were hoping it's like, this is so bad it's entertaining type thing. It's not. It's just bad. Like, it's not worth watching.
And especially if, like, for me, like, you got the original out there. I think the original holds up and it's great. And yeah, this is just like a really kind of lifeless retelling of it. With the things that they added, didn't amount, like, okay, that's neat that they played the long game on them, but also if you think about it a little bit, it's kind of stupid that, you know, it's like a 20-year game that they're playing on him.
So dumb.
Yeah, and then, like, the so, stupid, so dumb. At least in the version we watched, like, the stupid, you know, final scene, like, the 6 months later scene, sucks. It's like a shitty fucking topper onto this shit sundae that we've been eating.
I don't even think, like, the whole like lighting of the Wicker Man and the burning of it even holds up to what was done in the original. Like, that one has a feeling of dread as the flames kind of, like, creep up and you know, it hits that first goat and you know, Howie starts to realize, shit, like, this is really, really bad. Like, and he starts praying. And in this one, it's like, you just have Cage yelling down at his daughter, who doesn't know shit about this guy. And like, no, don't light daddy on fire. No, don't put the torch down, Rowan. She doesn't know you, dude. Like, and then the whole burning is like kind of quickly done. Like, there's no lingering on it really. And
yeah, it's not as scary as the original. Like, it objectively is not as scary as the original at that point. Like, it's the same, but it's just not.
Like, burning to death is a terrifying ordeal.
Like, they show in the original, they show it, like, creeping up the thing, and you see the animals, like, panic inside the cages and shit inside of it. Like, it's just fucking nuts.
And this, like, the flame just got woof, and it's done. Like, you hear him yelling, and you know, Cage does a great, you know, crazy yell. And I think that piece is good here, but the rest of it, no.
I think he's fine in this movie, but the movie is just really poor. I'm gonna let you go first with a rating on this.
if you haven't gotten what I think of this, I think it's terrible. This is one of the worst films I've seen in a long, long time. I do not give a lot of super low scores out, but I'm going 1 out of 10.
Oh my god! Wow. All right. So I like, for me, it ultimately, at the end of the day, like, if you go, like, I'm thinking of this as, you're just a person who knows nothing, never saw the original, whatever, and you just turn this on. I think it is one. It's like, technically functional enough, like, it's like a technically fine movie, and it has the backbone of that original story, which is neat. I don't like the changes they made. I think I basically hate this movie, but I think those two things for me are what is holding my score up. I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 10, but that's a 4 out of 10 that to me is a total avoid. Like, it's like, this isn't worth the rental. Like, I guess if you're curious like me, because you're a big fan of the original, go ahead and rent it. You know, it's $3, but you're not going to get the thing that the internet promised you out of this. And
if you want a more modern, there's no reason to
watch this over. Yeah, go ahead.
If you want a more modern take on this type of story, go watch Midsommar. It's so much better.
Shit, go watch The Sacrament. I would say that is similar in a way. Yeah. And fucking better than this. I think a ton of movies are better than this. Most movies are better than this. I thought about going lower. I thought about going like maybe 3 out of 10. I don't, you know, It would have to, for it to go below that for me, it'd have to just be like, I don't know.
I mean, worse than not, this, like, it didn't light my TV on fire, but
yeah,
I pretty much wanted to like, well, maybe douse my TV.
One thing to remember is you gave the original a 6, so yeah. You're not quite as in love with this material as me. So you had a much lower ceiling and a much lower floor, I think. So I think before we come to our like consensus, which seems obvious here, we do run a poll for the films each month to see what people out there think is the better film. So I did ask, you know, which is the better film, 1973 Wicker Man or 2006? And, you know, we're just starting as a podcast, so it's only 7 votes. Hopefully we'll have more votes in the future. 1973 blew it away. It got, I think, an all but one vote. And, you know, it had 71% of the vote for the original Wicker Man.
Who out there? I want to know who you were.
I really hope whoever voted for the 2006 Wicker Man listens to the show and gets back to me or us on why they chose it. I think I have a guess of who it could be. I'm not going to say who it is, but
I need to know. I need to know why.
Maybe it's just someone trolling. I think it's someone trolling.
What it that has to be. It's like what makes this movie better than the original?
I think there are people that like 2006 as campy fun, which I can't find in it, but I know that's its reputation. But even then, even if you did like this one because you thought it was so bad it's good, I would say you'd still like the original more. And so I'm guessing we're in agreement on this, that the original one wins episode one here.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that pretty much wraps it up, except for Chris, you have to reveal our assignment for episode 2.
All right. So we are in the middle of crazy related to a pandemic of sorts. So I was thinking along those lines of illness, infection,
okay,
line can we go with? And I ended up on a pair of films similar to this, original and a remake, that deal in a way with these things. And I chose George Romero's The Cranes from 1973.
Oh.
And the 2010 remake.
Oh, shit!
So I thought they would be good. I mean, I believe we've both seen them before.
I have not seen the original.
Okay. So I think it'll be fun to kind of... It ties in a little bit, like, with the insanity going outside. I like the name, because I do think that there are definitely some crazies out there currently. And I'm interested to see how these films hold up.
I am totally surprised, because you had told me that you were also going to do remakes for your first month of picks, right? And for whatever reason, I don't know why, I thought you were going to go Dawn of the Dead.
I mean, that's not a bad choice. Like,
and yeah, I know you like those films, like, so.
Also, I mean, great... great ties to you know what's going on in society now with, you know, capitalism and, you know, society breaking down, and the remake of Dawn of the Dead has an amazing intro that's very relatable and maybe a little sobering to today. But no, I went with the crazy.
We'll
be watching that for June.
I'm actually really excited for this now that I know it, because one, I've never seen the original. I've been always mean to watch it. And two, I have not seen the crazy, like the remake, the one that like we know and I remember loving and since it came out. So I have no idea how it holds up for me. So it should be really fun for our June episode.
Yep.
Interesting picks. All right. So we'll be back next month with episode 2 of Recurring Nightmares. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back.